The content and opinions expressed during this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. They are not intended in any way to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Weight Loss Conversations, brought to you by 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions. Your hosts, Bradley Butterfield, Marlene Sexton, and Brandy Wiltermuth, have over 30 years' experience treating health issues associated with excess body weight. Get ready for an in-depth, honest discussion about weight loss and your health. Be sure to visit our website at 3.health. That's T-H-R-E-E.health.
Welcome to Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health, Medical and Behavioral Weight Loss Solutions. This is Brad Butterfield. I'm the Executive Director and a practicing psychotherapist with 3Health. And with me today is Brandy Wiltermuth, ARNP, and our medical director at 3Health. Hi, Brandy.
Hello.
And also with us today is Alexis Morales, our medical assistant and operations manager. Hi, Alexis.
Good morning.
Marlene Sexton can't be with us today. We miss Marlene. She's our director of therapy services. And, you know, you guys, before we even go any further today, we were at Low Carb USA all this past weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It was a great conference.
It was.
And it was held at the Hilton Hotel. It was an international conference. There were people from all over the world that were attending. We were fortunate to have it in Bellevue. Brandy, we usually have to travel, get on an airplane, and fly somewhere, stay in a hotel. It was really nice to have it in Bellevue.
Yeah,
this year.
It was
kind of neat. In fact, I know you and Alexis both got a room there. I since I live in Edmonds, I just drove back and forth.
Yeah, that was nice. So yeah. We could kind of stalk our heroes while we were there.
Yeah, it was neat. So every Monday morning when I introduce our program, I say 3Health Medical and Behavioral Weight Loss Solutions. And this, at the very beginning, on Friday, you and I kind of went back and forth about all of the things that we do at 3Health, and we talk about weight loss. And I know that in particular with all of the work that you do, we talk about medical and behavioral weight loss, but we do so much more at 3Health. You work with diabetes significantly in our practice, and so I know that that we like to say that you work with reversing diabetes. And then there's kind of a new term that we use. We call it cardiometabolic disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been talking a lot about reversing diabetes in our practice with our patients and cardiometabolic disorders as well as weight loss. Mm-hmm. And I know you and I go back and forth a lot on this. Weight loss is very important to most of our patients, especially initially when they come into the clinic.
Absolutely.
And so I don't want to forfeit weight loss as a term. For me and in my patients, and I know for Marlene, weight loss is still, for many of us, it's a big deal, right? I mean, our patients come in and they will often say to me, gosh, if it's a female patient, might say, I want to keep up with my husband and the kids on a hike. Or sometimes, really sadly, I'll hear something like, for the first time in my life, I had to maybe use a seatbelt extender on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's lots of emotional reasons why weight loss is still important. However, for you clinically, reversing diabetes and diabetes recovery and cardiometabolic disorders are such a big part of what we do in our clinic.
Yeah.
That I don't know if we struggle with how we describe ourselves, but we do so many things.
We do.
Yeah.
And I think that the most patients, because we do a pretty thorough medical evaluation, some people have a very good idea of what their medical situation is and the goals that they have when they come in. Maybe, you know, they want to reduce the amount of medications they're taking. Maybe they have a family history that's very riddled with type 2 diabetes, and their goal is to avoid that. And you know, my brother died of a heart attack at 40, and everyone says, I'm fine, but I'm worried. So, yeah, it's a really important part of what we do, and we do help people lose weight. And that is the primary driver for people to come in. but they also soon realize that there's a lot of medical reasons why they should lose body fat and not necessarily just weight. So I focus on helping people lose quality weight loss and from body fat instead of muscle. Okay. And that's a big component of helping people understand what a realistic goal weight is and seeing their metabolic markers get better as they're doing that and not having to sacrifice the metabolism is the goal.
So we've all maybe been raised since we were little kids to think about this number, this magic number on the scale. And that's okay. I mean, that's where we've all been driven. We don't fault anybody for that. And we've talked often on our program about biometrics. Mm-hmm. And to keep it simple, biometrics is looking at lean muscle mass and body fat percentages that you and Alexis measure right when somebody comes into the clinic, and to educate people that their lean muscle mass and the percentage of body fat that they're carrying is very important.
It's actually the most important independent risk factor for developing diseases.
Okay. So although the number on the scale to so many of us is an important number, we went to this Low Carb USA conference, and we heard scientists and researchers and physicians and authors, people that have been in this industry for decades. And we sat, you and Alexis and I sat through seminar after seminar after seminar, starting Friday morning all the way until Sunday evening, listening to lots of fascinating scientific research, frankly, about fat. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a whole lot of talk about numbers on a scale, was there?
Not a lot.
Yeah. Although it can be correlative. I mean, people, when they reduce fat, often it's correlative to the number on the scale going down.
Mm-hmm. I heard more of that in the testimonials.
Did
where
you?
People would say how much weight they've lost.
Okay.
And then they would say, and I've been on keto for, you know, 2 years or whatever.
Okay. So keto being a different way of eating, and promoting fat loss off the body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Healthy weight loss, if I can say that. And boy, did I learn a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever touch another piece of sugar in my life, but it was transformative for me. It really learned a lot.
Yeah, because I think, you know, it's really easy to continue to have this calories in, calories out model of thinking about weight. Mm-hmm. And I've said before on this program, and most of my patients realize that I don't care about the calories because we're not a closed system that you can measure in and out, and it's going to stay, you know, it has to equal. And so I think that might be, and I'm guessing that was maybe one of the bigger things for you that you had to sort of wrestle with, because pretty much everybody up there said you don't have to count what you're eating. You don't have to know a whole lot about the calories. You'll eat less because you're eating foods that are more satiating and take longer to digest and produce their own metabolic advantage. So just wondering if that was the thing that really got you the most.
It did. And I've been doing this long enough and in clinics long enough that I've been hearing this year after year after year, but this weekend a lot of it really did sink in for me. And I've been trying to practice this way of eating, but just the science and the research that I saw this weekend was astounding. Mm-hmm. A lot of it really did sink in.
So was it more of challenging that fat in dietary fat intake is okay and good, and actually we need to promote more of that? Instead of the standard kind of low-fat, eat all your fruits
and
vegetables.
Well, sure. It's so counterintuitive, especially in, for my generation, because I was raised as an athlete and raised in the 60s and 70s, that everything that was marketed to me, and boy, did we hear some interesting marketing stories, the history of marketing. But everything was low-fat, low-fat, low-fat. And I'm sure most of our listeners out there at some point in their lives have heard this, you know.
I think most people are still trying to ascribe to that.
Yeah, and so low fat had to be something else. If it was low fat, then it either had to be one of the other two macronutrients, had to be protein or carbohydrate, and I think we probably all know that meant carbohydrate, and that typically didn't mean broccoli or carrots. It was high sugar.
Yeah. Processed grains.
It was processed grains and sugars. And so, and then, of course, as an athlete, it was always carbo-load. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was, we thought that was the healthy pasta stuff. Well, as I've learned over the years, that has metabolized in my gut as a processed grain, just the sugar, the same way.
Yeah.
And looking at all the scientific studies this weekend, continue to learn all of that. Another thing, you know, that was so interesting to me is the history of this low-fat, high-carbohydrate loading is relatively new. This is something that came to us here in the United States and maybe other places in the world, mostly in the 1970s.
Well, yeah, and because in the 1880s and 90s where people were writing textbooks that said, of course, you have to cut the sugar and the flour if you want to lose weight. Like, it wasn't even a debate.
Right.
Mr. Banting put out his little pamphlet about how he lost weight by cutting carbohydrates, and everyone looked at him like, duh, of course, we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
Eat the proteins and the fat and don't eat the carbs.
So it's time to take a break. This is Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health, Medical and Behavioral Weight Loss Solutions, and maybe we can also say diabetes recovery and cardiometabolic disorders. There's all kinds of things. So
yeah.
We'll take a break and we'll be right back. Thank you.
With decades of experience helping patients change their lives, 3Health Weight Loss Solutions can help you too. At 3Health, we provide proven and science-based solutions for realistic, achievable, and sustainable results. We're unique, just like you, and the relationships you have with food and yourself. Find out how we treat obesity, depression, high cholesterol, and more. Just give us a call and change your life today, 425-606-0022, or visit us online at 3.health. That's THREE.health.
An alternative to everything else on your radio dial. Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. We've been talking about the Low Carb USA conference that Brandy and Alexis and I attended this last weekend and how amazing it was and all of the things that we learned. And Brandy, you asked Alexis and me about kind of our aha moments, what really struck us, and Alexis and I both answered those. So I guess it's my turn. What was your aha moment? What really blew you away this weekend of what you learned at this great conference in Bellevue that we attended?
So I have two.
Okay.
Can I have two?
Yeah, you can have two.
Okay. Number one was the blatant, way that our food was manipulated to make us addicted. I think that, and looking at the history of how that happened and who was behind it.
I know
tobacco
where you're going.
Companies.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It really drives it home, I think. So most of us kind of go, oh yeah, those foods aren't good for us, and we shouldn't have them, but now I just feel like it's toxic poison, and I can't help thinking about it in any other way. And it's scary to me to, you know, think about how every day kids are getting their goldfish crackers and their, you know, gummy fruit chews and things like that, and it's just, we're just addicting them at such an early age. Like, it just, it was obvious to me. I grew up in the 70s, and thank goodness my mom was pretty, you know, determined to make a lot of the food that we ate. But even then, I can for sure tell you that I was addicted to sugar as a kid, for sure.
So, Brandy, you know, you start out by saying blatant. Another word that I would, I think we could talk about is it was deliberate.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, we're kind of missionaries for eating healthy here.
Proper human diet.
Yeah, but there, talk a little bit to our listeners about, and we can go back and forth here, about what we learned about in the 1980s with R.J. Reynolds, tobacco giant, and some of the other huge tobacco companies, what they did with purchasing the processed food companies. That one blew me away.
I'd never seen it that clearly. Mm-hmm. I mean, presented so clearly.
Yeah.
And when you think about that, that was because, you know, they realized that, people know cigarettes cause cancer and we got to make money somehow. So let's addict the food. Let's get people addicted to the food because they're not going to smoke anymore.
So have you and Alexis heard about the tobacco companies injecting sugar into the cigarettes?
Yeah.
Had you guys known about that before? I'd heard about that, but that was presented to us by the researchers this weekend, and I kind of thought maybe that was anecdotal, but I that was kind of amazing when I heard about that.
Yeah,
and they said that was so that we could with the cigarette smoke we could inhale the cigarettes more easily.
Yeah, I don't know what their reasoning, except for just to make it even more addictive.
Yeah,
I'm just waiting for the warning label for sugar that says will cause obesity, cancer, all these other diseases.
So that was kind of so the tobacco companies discovered with the advent of automated cigarette rolling machines. So when cigarettes were no longer hand rolled with tobacco and cigarette papers,
that was something I did not know. I did not know originally all cigarettes were hand rolled.
Well, that's because you're young, no? But yeah, and so with those automated machines, when they could start producing cigarettes at such a large, fast quantity, thereby reducing the price, and then injecting sugar into those cigarettes, and you could then make the tobacco would become quite a bit sweeter and more attractive to smoke, and then also making the tobacco that much easier to inhale in your lungs.
Well, and maybe it was more of a bridge to go, you need sugar all the time. Oh, you're going to quit smoking, but here's another way to get your sugar.
So the addictive, not only the addictive quality of the nicotine, but also adding the addictive quality of the sugar to the cigarettes.
Right.
Yeah,
and
we know about,
you know, sugar, fat, salt added to these processed foods, and they have, it is down to a literal science of, you know, the shape and crystal of the salt in each individual food, what is going to hit our bliss point and make us go, oh gosh, I need more of that.
Okay.
So I don't know the exact date, but maybe you do, Brandy. How long have we known that sugar is addicting? I mean, I can picture, you know, the CT scan, but how long have we known that?
Well, it's interesting because guess what, you guys? Gary Taub, famous writer, and Brandy, you could give us, he was one of
we
our first
him.
Speakers. I know he's a hero of you too. So during the conference, I got online and ordered Gary's book, Sugar.
The Case Against Sugar.
Yeah, The Case Against Sugar. And it was waiting when I came home from the conference Sunday night. It was waiting on my front porch. And so to answer your question, Alexis, the first several chapters of his book talk about the history of sugar.
Okay.
So the addictive quality of sugar, he goes way back to Christopher Columbus, bringing sugar cane from the Americas back to Spain and back to Europe. And so the addictive quality and then the availability of sugar, sugar was truly seen just like gold. as a trading commodity in Europe in the 1700s and 1800s, or even longer than that, in the 1600s, 1700s. So
since the beginning of time,
yeah,
I guess.
So when you ask about sugar as a valued commodity, an addictive commodity, that's been recognized for a long time. So he, in his book, it's a great book. I'd recommend if somebody wants to find out about how sugar's been valued over the centuries, get the book.
I'm just curious if it's, you know, right up there in its addictive qualities with cocaine, then why is it not on Schedule 1?
Well, we saw that, you know, at the conference that we saw some of the researchers, didn't they, Brandy, talked about the MRI tests that have been run with sugar.
And how sugar actually hits the reward center faster.
Yeah.
But what she's saying is we know this is addictive and dangerous, and why aren't we doing something about it? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to happen just like it did with nicotine and tobacco. Until people start to really put together, oh, my health problems are related to the processed food that I'm eating, and the processed food is delivered in such a way to make me addictive, there's not going to be a whole lot of change. And like I said before, you know, people knew that smoking caused cancer a long time before the labels had to reflect that. Before, you couldn't smoke in a restaurant, and then you couldn't smoke in a bar. And I mean, these kinds of institutional-wide changes have to take place, and it's not going to be voluntary. I think it's going to have to come from a lot of different sources, and it's going to have to be, you know, a huge public health campaign. But, you know, nobody is going there because big food is in charge of
and one of our challenges,
of
Brandy, and the reasons that it's challenged is we don't really have any clinical testing. It's very tough to test where we can find candidates that haven't been exposed to sugar. I had to do clinical tests where we have people with absolutely sugar and no sugar. So some of the comparisons that they've done in testing have been societies that haven't been exposed, isolated societies or isolated cultures. If they can find some cultures in isolated areas on this planet that haven't been exposed to sugar, they've done some derivative conclusions, but that's a tough one.
Right.
We can test people that haven't been exposed to nicotine and thereby cancer as a result of nicotine. It's pretty damn tough to find the same people that haven't been exposed to sugar. We all have
and actually,
so
it would be
tough.
Quite unethical to give them sugar now.
Yeah, so this is tough clinical testing for us.
So I know we have to take a break soon, but I think it'll be interesting to hear from you, Brad, about what you hear from patients about getting away from sugar and their feelings around
sure.
that.
Sure. Yeah, about the emotions. So, is it time for a break?
It is.
Okay, so this is Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. We've been talking about the conference that we attended this weekend, Low Carb USA. Brandy gave us one aha moment. Did you give us your second one?
Not yet.
Okay. When we come back, you give us the second aha moment that you had this weekend. Thanks. Be right back.
Introducing 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions, a unique weight loss clinic backed by real medical research with a treatment focusing on the entire person, mind, body, and spirit. From medical services for obesity and high blood pressure to behavioral services for emotional eating and depression, 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions can help you change your relationship with food, your relationship with yourself, and with life. Find out more, 425-606-0022. Or online at 3.health. That's 3.health.
Seattle, Tacoma, Antwerp? That's right. We're streamed worldwide on our app and on the web at 1150kknw.com.
So we're back from our break. This is Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. I'm Brad Butterfield, and I'm here today with Brandi Wiltermuth and Alexis Morales. We were talking about our low-carb USA conference that we attended this weekend, and with lots of excitement and a number of things that we learned. And so, Brandi, we all went around and talked about kind of our aha moments, the things that got us excited about what we heard this weekend and different researchers and authors that we listened to and physicians that spoke. And so you gave us, you said you had two aha moments. You, before the break, you gave us one of yours. What was the second one that you heard?
The second one was Dr. Robert Siwas, who did the, who was a bariatric surgeon.
In Florida, I think. Yeah.
And first of all, he's a surgeon. And for him to come out and say, you know, we got to look at the stress response and the behavior and how food is used to basically as a drug to calm us down or give us energy. It was really great to hear that. And
kind of radical for us, having come out of a surgical practice.
Right. Yeah. And he still does surgery, does bariatric surgery. But you can tell that he has talked to a lot of patients about this, and he has gotten, you know, over and over and over the same story from the patients about how they progress through this process of having to decrease addictive processed food in their life and sugar. I mean, that blew me away that he was so engaged. I have never met a bariatric surgeon that had taken that much interest in the behavioral and social and emotional part of this process.
Yeah, he was a dynamic speaker. In fact, you and I kind of cornered him in one of the hallways outside the conference center, didn't we? We had a good conversation with him. He's kind of a character of sorts.
And we just like saw all of these people.
Yeah. Really dynamic guy. And I think we did that because, as I said a second ago, you and I have come out of working in a surgical practice for a number of years, and he's pretty unusual guy for being a surgeon and embracing the medical and behavioral aspects of our practices. We were really engaged with him.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about his talk, his, you know, presentation was very, you know, reaffirming of what we're doing.
Right.
So to have a weight loss clinic that actually has a component that focuses on the behavioral part, I mean, that's what he said is required, and he does that. It's just there's not a whole lot of that out there. And even if people say that they have, you know, health coaches, and not to put health coaches down, but, you know, some of the stuff that people are dealing with is beyond a craving, and it's going to take a more skilled person help people deal with this stuff. And I just really like that he reaffirmed that what we're doing is both right and helpful and effective.
Yeah, and as I remember, he'd kind of cornered me as a behaviorist, challenged me about working with patients postoperatively around depression.
Right.
And then also, I remember you and I were talking to him about the post-operative patient and weight regain, and he was kind of all over that, which for a surgeon to even admit that was...
Oh, he didn't mince any words
either. He really didn't. I kind of loved it. And he said, he talked about the fact that the post-operative and pre-operative education that was required for that patient, or they were going to regain the weight.
Right.
And if they weren't learning how to eat correctly.
Right. He said 1 to 3 years after surgery, people will have regained all their weight if they don't change their relationship with food.
Yeah, that was amazing that he saw that quite clearly, didn't he?
Right. And well, and for a surgeon to say that, because that it doesn't mean the surgery failed. It means that we've got to do more work with the people that are having the surgery.
Right. And educating, and you working with them as a medical bariatrician, and me working with them around their emotional issues around eating. So, it was
powerful.
Yeah, it was powerful. So there was another researcher, scientist, that talked about the oxidization of food. In other words, how we oxidize and priority of oxidizing food. Speak to that for a minute, because I found that one fascinating. I love that subject.
Yeah, so Craig Emmerich, his name is, he's actually, I don't know what his background is. I don't know if he has a PhD, but it didn't matter to me. The information he gave, I think, was really, really good. And he and his wife, who's written some cookbooks for keto and low carb, I think mostly just keto, have helped, you know, thousands of people lose weight. And he had a lot of examples of the different kinds of things besides weight loss that they were helping people with their low carb and ketogenic meal plans. So I like that. And so the way he explained the oxidative rate of different chemicals or foods or macronutrients was kind of interesting. It's based on what the body has capacity for. And so if you think of it in that term, if there is no biological capacity to store something, then the body has to get rid of it and you know, oxidate it, break it down, and eliminate it.
Okay, so you got it. I, you know, I always want to simplify things. So oxidate it, and he rated these 1 through 5 mm-hmm. for us, and these were kind of how they, the fuels they burn first. Is that fair to say that, or
right.
how they burn these as fuels? Right.
And,
okay.
And they do that in that priority based on how much storage capacity it is for that nutrient or chemical.
Okay, so the first fuel, if it's in your body, uh-huh. that it's gonna or that it, that it's gonna oxidize or take priority to burn first was
alcohol.
Okay, so if we have any alcohol in our bodies, then that's the first energy or fuel that the body's gonna burn.
And it can't ignore it.
Okay.
Because it's a toxin.
Okay.
And so it has to deal with that alcohol then and there. It can't say, well, maybe I'll wait until later and try to break this down into something that's not poison.
Okay.
It has to do it right away.
Okay.
Obviously, you can die of alcohol poisoning.
Okay.
Right? So that's an example of that. And so we don't have any storage capacity for alcohol. And that means that anything that we put in our body after alcohol is not going to get digested and utilized. It's just going to get stored.
It's not going to get burned as fuel.
Right. Because the body doesn't have the capacity to do both.
Okay, so here I am, you guys. I'm sitting in a restaurant, and it's time to go in and meet some friends. And I have a couple glasses of wine or a couple cocktails, and then I order some appetizers or dinner. And my dinner and appetizers are made up of my macronutrients, which are going to be carbohydrates, and they're going to be protein and fat.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hit that right?
Yeah.
And I've had my alcohol in me. So, Brandy, you're saying that, and what this researcher said, is my body has to use that alcohol as the primary fuel, burn that first, before it can touch the carbohydrate, the protein, or the fat.
Correct.
So where does the carbohydrate, protein, and fat go?
Storage
into fat cells.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, the protein will have to get broken down eventually because mm-hmm. it is too big to get stored the way it is.
Okay.
But yeah, it just can't prioritize any of those fuels. So it has to put them away for later. And
okay.
sometimes, you know, we have a pretty good capacity for storing you know, carbohydrates in terms of glycogen in the liver and the muscles. Protein, you know, we can store quite a bit in our muscles. And fat, we have unlimited storage.
So the alcohol becomes the primary fuel and the rest of it goes to my fat stores.
Right.
Okay, that's encouraging.
Yeah, it kind of makes you think twice and looking at that glass of wine, right?
Yeah, so how long is it burning the alcohol?
I don't know exactly, but numbers that I've heard is it takes 4 hours per ounce of alcohol for your body to detoxify
really?
It.
Four yes. hours sure. per ounce?
Yes.
So that's a long time.
It is.
Okay. So the food...
really makes you think twice.
So
yeah,
all
a
that
glass
good,
of wine is 6 ounces.
Yeah. So all that good, healthy food I'm putting in is just going straight to my fat storage.
Yeah.
And it's using the alcohol as primary fuel.
Yep.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
And so, it's a super sugar.
And it's a super sugar. So... you know, patients will say, should I quit drinking as much alcohol if I want to lose weight? And often I look at the behavioral side, I'll say, well, I know I'm less inhibited. I don't practice very good discipline. You know, I'm more relaxed. But boy, there's a biophysical reason here that you're, that we got to with this researcher saying there's other reasons too, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I always tell people that if you're going to continue drinking alcohol in your life and that's part of your lifestyle, then you have to do it while you're losing weight.
Okay.
Would it be better if nobody drank alcohol ever? Yes.
But maybe not.
But that's
realistic.
Not reality. Okay. So we have to deal with everybody's lifestyle and, you know, take that into consideration, because the more important thing is if they'll keep doing it.
Okay. But the quantity and amount of alcohol that you're drinking is going to slow down your weight loss or affect your weight loss.
For sure.
Okay. And this researcher showed us why.
Yep.
Okay. So, Alexis, it's time for another break.
It is.
All right. Well, we're having so much fun. Weight loss conversations with 3Health. We're going to take a break. We're talking about lots of fascinating things that we learned this past weekend at our conference at Low Carb USA. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.
With decades of experience helping patients change their lives, 3Health Weight Loss Solutions can help you too. At 3Health, we provide proven and science-based solutions for realistic, achievable, and sustainable results. We're unique, just like you, and the relationships you have with food and yourself. Find out how we treat obesity, depression, high cholesterol, and more. Just give us a call and change your life today. 425-606-0022. Or visit us online at 3.health. That's THREE.health.
Tell your friends about Alternative Talk 1150.
Back to Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. We've been talking about our conference that we went to this last weekend in Bellevue, Washington. It was called Low Carb USA. And we've gone around the table with Brandy and myself and Alexis talking about our aha moments. And we were talking about how our bodies, Brandy, oxidize food as fuel. And we got kind of hung up on the last segment because I found it so fascinating how the first thing that we burn as fuel, if it's in our bodies, is alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then why don't you real quickly kind of move through the rest of the fuels or macronutrients that
the priority.
Right.
So after exogenous ketones, which nobody knows what that is, and we can skip right over if you're not doing a ketogenic diet, it doesn't apply to you. Next one is carbohydrates. And that is because in terms of storage, there isn't as much room for storing carbohydrates in our body. But we can keep eating them easily.
Which we all love to eat.
We do.
Okay. We eat a lot of carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Or a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next is protein.
Okay.
There's pretty limited storage with that as well. And that's why carbs and protein both have to get converted to some kind of fat, because we have an unlimited capacity for storing fat. So it gets oxidized last. And because of that, it's a slower release fuel and we can burn it for much longer and have energy for longer. So that sort of helps put into kind of a context of why we say fat, eat fat to lose fat.
Yeah.
If you understand that process of how your body breaks things down and stores energy.
So most of us would really like to reduce the percentage of body fat.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we talked at the beginning of the show about our biometrics. I work on increasing, as we all do, our lean muscle mass and reducing our body fat percentages. We want to burn body fat. That may sound obvious. It's not that always that easy.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get to that fifth marker that you're talking about, the fifth fuel Mm-hmm. The fifth way to oxidize fuel or that macronutrient is fat. And unfortunately, it's the fifth one. It's at the end. Mm-hmm. So how do we, you know, it's called, this conference was called Low Carb USA. How do we, is keto diet, is that the way you're saying that we get there to the very last macronutrient to burn?
Maybe this is a good opportunity to talk about low carb and ketogenic.
Okay.
Because a low carb diet has lots of different sort of ways of determining what it is. You can do a very liberal low carb diet, you can do a moderate, or you can do a more aggressive. And what people are talking about when they typically are talking about a ketogenic diet, it's different than a standard low carb diet. Okay, so those are two different things, but people can become keto adapted, which means your body's burning ketones, which is a byproduct of burning fat, regardless of if they're doing a purely ketogenic diet or just a low carb diet. Okay, so, but everybody's level or threshold, right, of how many carbohydrates they can eat and still burn fat is variable. But people who have insulin resistance or a problem with their blood glucose are going to have much less tolerance for that carbohydrate. So it's variable. But ketogenic just means that you're burning ketones. It could happen on low carb. It could happen on very aggressive low carb. It could happen on ketogenic.
Because keto is really a popular term right now.
Right.
Everybody's running around saying, I'm eating keto, I'm eating keto.
Right, you're not eating keto. You're eating in a way that puts your body into ketosis.
Okay.
So.
And by doing that, if it's truly putting your body in ketosis, you're burning fat rather than burning carbohydrate, which was number three in your fuel source.
And if you remember Ted Naiman, he said it's never all fat.
Right.
It's always a mixture of the two, mm-hmm. but you become a primary fat burner versus a primary glucose burner.
Okay.
And that helps because glucose is, we don't have the capacity to store very much, which means we don't have access to as much. But we have lots of body fat. Even when people are slender and have low body fat percentage, the amount of fuel and energy in the body fat is essentially unending, unless you're an ultramarathon runner, then maybe not.
Okay.
But yeah, so what I also liked about his presentation was that he had a lot of kind of testimonials from people that he'd helped with weight loss and other things. And some of those other things I think are pretty amazing, like Alzheimer's, ADHD, pain, chronic pain, MS, Graves' disease, Parkinson's, skin conditions, IBS, Crohn's. I mean, it's just unbelievable the plethora of different types of things. You know, it wouldn't be as astonishing to me if it was like, yeah, if we do a ketogenic diet, all of your GI stuff goes away. But your MS and Parkinson's and ADD and that stuff doesn't do anything for that, right? But in some people, it can, and that's very powerful, I think.
Sure.
Just changing the amount of macronutrients and when and how you're eating them, and getting, you know, these tremendous responses to these diseases that many times are just like, you know, you're kind of just stuck with it.
You know, another thing that we'd heard Alexis and Brandy, and that we've also found out in our own lives, is eating this way is the amount of energy that it brings us. And I know that's not specific to dealing with all these diseases, but is eating this in this manner does bring a tremendous amount of energy. And did we see that with a lot of people that we were around this weekend.
Well,
talk about an energetic group. It made me kind of crazy. I mean, they were bouncing off the walls.
It was really fun. So that was really impressive to me. And I had heard some things, but to actually see pictures of the people and hear their testimonials is quite powerful.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there was they were inspiring, mm-hmm. and a lot of people had been transformed. You know, and also Alexis, I think you mentioned this. It wasn't only the scientists and the writers and the physicians and people that are quote spending their lives or making a living doing this. There were people at the conference that were in many other professions, and even people who maybe weren't working, but that had found the healing process through there and were just kind of there to testify how this had changed their lives as ordinary people.
Yeah, they went through the conversion, yeah, they call it.
Yeah, and that was kind of fun. Those people stand up and tell their stories. Mm-hmm. Was kind of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
To hear those.
I think a lot of people were just, you know, lay people looking for more insight on low-carb diets.
Yeah, and many of them very bright and successful and really added to the conference.
Yeah.
I think they touched on that, right? Successful people having one of the biggest problems. I think Joan actually talked about that. This obesity problem has reached those people, even though you could be the smartest person in the room, this is still a very big problem.
Right, right. You can still be addicted to processed food, and you can still have a problem with your weight and be pre-diabetic.
Well, on the opposite side of that, there was a physician from Tennessee. He was a hoot, Dr. Mm-hmm. Ken Berry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the name of, what was the name of his lecture? It was What Doctors...
The Lies My Doctor Told Me.
I like that. The Lies My Doctor Told Me. And he's a successful physician with a practice in Tennessee, and he started out by talking the limited education that physicians had not gotten on nutrition when they were in medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And he outlined for us that most physicians had gotten less than 30 hours total in medical school on nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, how primary that was in their practices for their patients with mm-hmm. questions. Patients coming in and asking so many questions of them about what they should eat and put in their mouths, and how woefully uneducated the physicians were and unable to answer those questions.
Yeah, it's quite surprising, probably to the general public, not to me or other physicians.
He was really straightforward and often really humorous about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed his lecture very much.
Yeah, I think he's a very dynamic speaker, and he's, you know, it takes something to stand up there and say, I didn't know anything about this.
And yet he's a guy in his, late 40s or 50s, and gone on to educate himself and take, of course, a lot of courses and things to figure it out on his own.
And what I think is truly inspiring about it is that people, like, he got there because of his own problem. He was overweight, type 2 diabetic doctor, you know, and looking at it like, this isn't working for me.
Right.
And how could it possibly be working for my patients? Because I see it's not.
Yeah.
So they you know, arrive at this conclusion not because they went to a training. They aren't getting low-carbon training. They're doing it because, you know, the biochemistry makes sense. And these are smart people. And they understand that. Then they apply those things to their own life and see the changes. And then it's sort of... It's really hard to, like, keep it to yourself once that happens to you, because you want to share the secret and the message, and it just kind of catches on then. Someone else tells someone else.
One thing I thought was great, and as an example of that, was we met those women from Argentina, and the nutritionist really loved low carb, and she was teaching her patients low carb and keto, but her physician that she worked for was not. And she didn't know anything about it, so she dragged her along.
That's right.
And said, you're going to listen to this. And totally, I mean, I saw her. I was watching her as she was listening to these people talk, and she just looked so engaged. She was taking pictures and writing everything down as if this whole other, like, it was coming to her all of a sudden. Her aha moment was just every second.
I bet we saw a lot of aha moments happening.
Yeah,
I think it was so wonderful that they came all the way up from Buenos Aires.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we sat with them, didn't we, on Friday night at, mm-hmm. at the dinner table. We sat with them, and they kind of told us their story about, and God bless the physician that was willing to come up with her nutritionist and follow her up here and be willing to open her life up and learn.
Yeah.
And to do that, that's not real common.
Yeah, some humility there.
No kidding. And we kind of, I talked to them throughout the weekend, and they seemed to be enjoying themselves. They had big smiles on their face, so I'm sure they were learning a lot, so. Brandy, what else did you see at this weekend's conference that was moving for you?
Well, you and I both met with Joan Eifland after her talk about how it's not an eating disorder, it's a processed food addiction model.
Right.
And I think, you know, that was one of the most, I guess, striking lectures or presentations, and I hope that we can get Joan.
Amazing story.
Yeah.
She has a Stanford MBA, and then she went on as an older adult, like many of us did, to get a PhD in food research. And then Dr. Joan Eiflin did a 23-year research study on the food industry. And
yeah.
I have to tell you, the facts and figures as a business researcher and a food researcher, and the way that she put her lecture together, kind of, it blew our hair back. And
yeah.
I don't have much hair to blow back, but it was amazing.
Right.
It really blew us all away, what
yeah.
she told us about the food industry and what's happened to us since the 1980s.
Yeah.
Was amazing.
I'd
love to. In fact, she said that she'd love to come on our radio show. I think that'd be a great show for us to have her come talk to us.
Yeah, I think that would be amazing.
Yeah.
The other thing as a whole was just sort of like, I found my people.
Did you?
Yeah.
You thought, well, you're going to hang out with these people now?
Well, I'm going to try to organize a Seattle Low Carb group that we can keep in contact with.
Okay.
And keep, you know, because you do, and especially in the beginning, you feel like...
an outsider?
Yeah, like, are you sure this is right? Because it feels right, but everyone else isn't doing it. And so you kind of question that for a little while. But so it's really nice to have colleagues and people to bounce some of the stuff off, especially some of the clinical stuff, you know, in that setting. So I'm excited.
And I'm excited for you. I know that in the clinic here and in the medical setting at times that it's difficult for you, that you get isolated. We know that you have the research and the science and the practice to back up what you're saying. But there are still a lot of physicians out there who don't understand this.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of patients coming in who are in conflict with that.
Right.
You know, we hear this. Gee, I went to my doctor and I'm dealing with cholesterol, and they just want to put me on a statin. And you say things like, "Well, I think I can deal with this with the way you're eating."
Right.
And that's radical for a lot of physicians. They're not comfortable with that.
Yeah, they don't like me all that much sometimes.
Yeah.
But you know, if they give it time, they see the results, and then I wouldn't say they support, but they don't. You know. Give the patient too much static.
And you're seeing the results.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are also always very careful in our clinic that you're sending all of those medical records and those results back to the physician, and you're getting good feedback. So we do communicate very clearly with the different physician groups. So that's important.
Right.
So what else do we have to say about this? Anything else? I know we're coming to the end of our time. We've talked about having some other guest speakers from Low Carb USA on. It would be really fun. We learned a lot this weekend. I continue to learn.
Yeah.
About
we all do.
How to eat. And one of the feedbacks that we're getting with the keto way and lifestyle from many of our patients is, and for myself, it is a new way to eat. And I have to think about it. I have to work at it.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday night, we broke up. I think we all left each other, what, at 5 or 6 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to one of my favorite neighborhood restaurants. You'll love this. And I sat at the bar. Bartender knows me. I was hungry. And I wanted to order my favorite meatloaf. And, of course, that comes floating in a great plate of white mashed potatoes.
Mm.
And after the conference, I knew I couldn't do that. You guys were both looking over my shoulders. I could feel you there. And the meatloaf wasn't, I checked, and it wasn't, you know, filled with wheat. It was pure beef and pork. So I found that was pretty pure. And so I said, okay, got to take the mashed potatoes off. And my favorite bartender kind of raised his eyebrows and said, well, that's the best part. And I said, nope, I'm just going to do the meatloaf. And he brought me some really nice green beans on the side. And then he felt so bad that I wasn't getting the mashed potatoes, he brought me a nice Caesar salad. So
aww.
I had my green beans and my great piece of meatloaf and my Caesar salad, and I was very proud of myself. So
good job.
I did have a good meal. So
awesome.
I am learning. And what I'm learning is you go to your restaurant, you read the menu, and it's real doable. I was satiated, I had a good meal, and I wasn't full of sugar when I was
done. And you're still alive to tell us about it.
I'm still feeling good. It felt pretty good when I went home, too. So
good.
It works.
Yep.
Okay. So This has been Weight Loss Conversations with 3Health. We're a medical and behavioral weight loss clinic. And as I said at the beginning of the show, we also work on reversing diabetes, and we work with our patients in cardiometabolic disorders and do all kinds of things here that are important. And it's been good to be with you. And Brandy Wiltermuth, ARNP, and Alexis Morales, our operations manager. So it's been a good to share with you this week what we've learned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to Weight Loss Conversations, brought to you by 3Health Medical Weight Loss Solutions. We love hearing from our audience, so be sure to drop us a note. We so appreciate when you tell family and friends about our program. Also, don't forget that our past programs are found at 1150kknw.com. That's 1150kknw.com. Have a wonderful week and tune in next Monday at 8 a.m. That's 8 a.m. Monday. Be sure to visit our website at 3.health. That's T-H-R-E-E.health.
The content and opinions expressed during this program were those of the hosts, guests, and callers. They are not intended in any way to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease.